listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Black armbands for our boy Jimmy Benning today.
Just woke up with a stench on his nostrils.
Yeah, it's... he had to chew on that one.
He just had a voicemail, pressed sound on. You're getting $3 million added on your cap. It is... We got to do a top 10 list tomorrow of the ultimate sports drag buns.
Yeah. Roberto Luongo and Mike Gillis, who was the GM at the time who gave Luongo the deal. And with Luongo retiring today.
They both went on his front lawn and took a deuce and left.
Oh. It's the ultimate sky dump.
And it's his right, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, Luongo,
defended, like Roberto Luongo.
They used the powder room at Jimmy's house and sky dumped in the powder room. And he had to wake up and deal. He saw both Roberto and Mike Gillis in the powder room.
Yeah.
Hanging from the rafters.
Yeah. It was not good.
Salut, mon ami.
Look at our man here. Pierre LeBrun's walking in the studio.
I'm like, am I getting attacked here? Left.
Good seeing you, buddy. Come
we're
on in.
On air. We're on air.
Yeah, we're good. Come on in. Come on in.
Hockey guys on air?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Roberto Luongo. And the first thing that should be pointed out is he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Right? But because of the fascination.
I don't know anymore. People seem to be questioning my...
He's a lock, in my opinion.
He's got to be a lock. I think he's a first ballot guy.
Third all-time in wins. Like, come on. Yeah.
Don't you think he's a first ballot guy?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, the lock of a Stanley Cup, I don't think, is something that can be gauged as highly as it used to in a 31-team league. I mean,
and Pierre, right.
We're going to have a lot of great players that don't win Stanley Cups, let's
right.
be honest.
And Ginla.
Don't you think when it's like, yeah, Ginla's name pops up and Roberto, and not saying that they're, I think they're both going, they are automatic first ballot.
Matt Sundin went in the first year.
Don't you think people that have been like around the Hall of Fame and guys' names keep getting dug up, they're like, thank God there's a newer guy. Like, thank God he's there so I can just say, boom.
Right.
It's almost like a bit of recency bias. Not in this particular case, but you want some fresh blood.
Yeah, you also want to get it right. I was really happy with Guy Carboneau yesterday. I know it led to a lot of debate, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with people having different takes on it. I just know that I watched him play at his best, and he was the best defensive center in the league before people knew what that was. And so I thought it was great to get that one right in a year in which there weren't any first-year obvious players to put in.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, next year will be amazing. Jerome Ginla will get in. It'll be a shoe-in. That'll be tremendous.
Yeah.
Just like Haley Wickenheiser was a shoe-in this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, she is the headliner. And I think it's tremendous for the women's game. You know, both my daughters play hockey, that the face of the 2019 class is not an NHLer. It's Haley Wickenheiser.
That's right.
And I love that.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's terrific.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, in my stance, I always feel, I kind of feel bad having Hall of Fame takes because it's not Guy Carboneau's fault. He had a great career. He was a great player.
Right.
Right. That's what I mean. I'm okay with the debate.
Right. I've always felt, and this goes across the board with every sport, you should know the guy's a Hall of Famer the second he retires.
Everyone, sure. Everyone says automatic in.
Right. And if you're not that second, you still had a great career, but I'm sorry, the Hall of Fame should be cherished, and it shouldn't be easy to get in.
But I know you watched him play, so you have a take that's based on a knowledge. And what I didn't like yesterday is there are a lot of younger reporters who just went at the numbers and said, well, his numbers, he's not making it for his offense.
500 points. Like, it's not like, when I heard the name, like, playing against him for many years, like, I know he was a little bit older, but.
I caught him on the
But he was. Like,
very
he was the guy.
He's
like
a great player.
I
great
brought
player.
This up, and we were talking about it in break. Like, I compare him to Patrice Bergeron. Now, Bergeron gets more points. I think Bergeron is more talented
on. And he'll be an interesting case, too. He won't be a Hall of Famer for everyone.
Bergeron?
I think he's a Hall of
Famer. He will be for me.
Oh,
but
slam dunk, Pierre.
I don't know if he'll be for everyone. He is for me.
Yeah,
but,
he is for me, too.
There have been
how many Selkies did Guy Carboneau win?
Three.
How many has Bergeron won?
Around the same.
Around the same, I think.
Yeah. I think, again, the difference is the international pedigree, where Carboneau wasn't on the 87 Cup team, the 91
now,
Cup team.
Again, before the Olympic players really got to play in his heyday. I mean, if the NHL players went to the Olympics in the 80s, he might have been their fourth line center.
Maybe.
On those
but the Canada Cup existed in 87 and 91. The best players were there.
No,
it doesn't matter.
It's
not here
debate.
To take a run.
It's a great debate.
Good for him. He's in.
I'm right, you're wrong. It's a good debate. All right, what else?
There you go. Well, this okay, let's touch on this Roberto Luongo stuff.
You've had your calculator out all day here.
because he retires today, and Florida gets hit with $1 million cap hit, give or take, for the next 3 years.
About $1.1 million.
Yeah, and they're okay with that. Apparently, they wanted that. Vancouver gets absolutely sewered here. I think the league should step in here. I think this is completely unfair. I think it's horrible for business.
Yeah.
We're talking about fans. It's the entertainment business.
Right.
The CBA has changed. There's term limit now. These cap circumventing deals are gone. That's right. Why they put in these penalties, to scare teams. It's gone. Why is Vancouver getting penalized for this?
You know, I don't know how much time we have on this. When this CBA came out, and obviously, you guys know I was covering the lockout in New York. And I was one of the first guys, once I got my hand on the raw edition of the CBA before it went out to everyone, to look at this cap recapture penalty. This is new. This didn't exist before. And when I wrote about it at the time, I called it the Luongo rule. Someone reminded me today, they sent me an old Google article from January 2013, where I referred to the cap recapture penalty as the Luongo rule, thinking that one day this would happen. I swear to God.
Right.
Now, as it turns out, it could have happened to Chris Pronger had he retired. He went on LTI. It could have happened to
Marian Hossa,
yeah. And now even Ryan Callahan, who's going to go in LTI, but had he retired. Bill Daly will tell you that he warned teams in the lead up to that lockout to stop negotiating backdiving deals.
Right.
And he says, I'm telling you, there will be a rule in the next CBA that will hammer you guys for if you keep doing these deals. So he will tell you that teams were warned to stop doing it, and Vancouver went out.
Yeah, but that's not Jimmy Benning's problem.
That's the thing. And it's not
Jim Benning inherits this. He had nothing to do with it. That's what stinks for the Canucks right now.
But it doesn't address their fans, Pierre, again, which I think gets lost with this every league.
Right.
It's the fans get screwed here.
Maybe the Canucks at some point this summer will bring it up with the league. I mean, if you remember when the New Jersey Devils, when Kovalchuk did the I'm going to Russia thing.
They retracted that.
They were hammered way harder than it ended up being. They still got some charges, but they negotiated a different. Now, I think the league at the time thought this was so bizarre. He had just signed the deal and he was leaving 2 years later.
Right.
That they had to basically make a one-time ruling. It's a bit different than this. I have to say, this is truly the intent of the cap recapture
rule. I understand that.
The thing is, every other guy who's been in this position hasn't retired. He's went on LTI so that he can collect money. I don't blame him. Roberto, one of a kind, is like, what's $3.6 million? I'm just calling it quits.
Mm-hmm.
That's Roberto Luongo.
I was reading, by all accounts, the organization.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah, he's going to go into the organization or be a consultant.
Yeah.
And it would surprise me if they make it up to him financially.
Well, hopefully it's not for $3.6 million, because that might raise eyebrows.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
He's going to make some money, I think. With Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider. All right, so.
I think Wodog just got that one there.
When you approach, like, this is such a different offseason because of the fascination with RFAs.
Yeah.
On Monday, it's supposed to be all about the UFAs. We're all going to be in the building, but I don't think it's going to be all about the UFAs. I think Artemi Panarin could sign a monster deal, and the next second we hear a scoop that Mitch Marner is in Detroit talking with Steve Yzerman, and that's what all of the focus is going to be on. How are you handling the RFA reporting in particular?
I mean, it's never seen before in my 24 years covering the league. I mean, we've had offer sheets before, but they've come at us from left field with almost no preamble. The Shea Weber one was completely out of nowhere, and no one heard anything. This one has a ramp up. And the thing is, it's not just Mitch Marner here.
Will anybody
in Toronto
pull the trigger, though? There's ramp up. We've talked about ramp up and excitement and blah, blah, blah.
You and I talked on the phone yesterday. I still think it's the threat of more than the actual thing happening. But what makes this more interesting is that it's so many players. I just tweeted out some news. Kyle Connor of the Winnipeg Jets got a bunch of calls today.
Right.
I'm telling you, if you're going to squeeze someone, Winnipeg's is certainly
a target.
What about
Carolina?
Right?
What about Tom Dundon?
Sebastian Aho's agent got some calls today, I put out on Twitter. And there's an owner that doesn't want to overspend.
Right.
But that's not overspending. That's the going rate.
Yeah. So the calls have gone out. And I don't know. I still think it's a means to an end for a lot of these agents, that it's just to put the feet to the fire to the teams they're trying to stay with. But maybe one of them sneaks through. Maybe one of them is like, you know what? I can't turn this down.
Well, what team are you focused on in terms of who's going to offer these big offer sheets.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I haven't heard a team definitively.
Yeah, and everyone's being very secretive about the teams that have phoned because it blows any chance if it leaks out, right?
Why would that be though?
Because
I think
there's a lot at stake here.
Like what? What are you talking about though? Reputation, relationships.
This is a huge risk for the team that's the predator here to follow through, and they don't want anything to come out before they actually do it. They will pull it off the table if it comes out before, is what I'm being told.
There's been a lot of talk about the Islanders. The one team I think that could do it and pull it off is the Rangers, because I think they're trying to get younger, have younger players in there. I think the New York Rangers is one team that could pull it off.
This is just not what I've heard. This is just me doing logic.
Right.
I agree with the Rangers, Islanders, New Jersey Devils.
Mm-hmm. Ray Shiro goes big game.
Ray Shiro's not scared to do this.
He's not shy.
I'll give you another curveball. Montreal Canadiens.
Hmm.
Telling you right now, it would not shock me.
They got money.
I have no indication they would. I'm just saying I'm looking at my
list of teams. This is just you. This is you speaking. Yeah.
This is a gut feeling. You know, you mentioned Steve Yzerman in Detroit. What better way to make a splash? Again, I don't think these guys are against the principle of it. I quoted Jarmo Kekalainen yesterday in Columbus saying it's in the rule book. Why not? He's not saying he would do one. But he was saying he's not against it. And here's a team losing all kinds of free agents this summer. Why wouldn't Columbus look at it?
Who was the manager at the draft that swore and said, like, our owners?
Ray Shiro. That was Ray Shiro.
Yeah, it was Ray Shiro. That's right. Like,
but it's one thing to yell and scream about it.
But you're right.
Because
no kidding.
These guys, I understand why it is in the rule book. But it's been in the rule book for 6 years and no one's done it.
Now, here's a counter. I don't think it's about, you know, angering your colleague. That's been overplayed. I'll tell you what a couple of GMs told me at the draft in Vancouver. A couple of GMs that I thought, you know, I bet you you're in on. He goes, you know, I'll tell you why I'm not going to do it. His point was, you give away 4 first-round draft picks for one of these mega RFAs. We think we're a good team. But what if you have one of those years, 3-4 years out, where everyone's hurt? Like Tampa a couple years ago. They should have never missed the playoffs, but everyone was hurt. Bang, lottery pick. I don't want to trade a lottery pick. That's what the GM said, and it's a very interesting thing. What if you end up trading 2 lottery picks?
Yeah.
So that's – I still think at the end of the day, like Brian Burke did to get Kessel out of Boston, say what you want about that deal, but he threatened Boston all day long with the offer sheet so that he could make a trade instead. I still think that's the route here for teams looking at these players if they think they can get them.
Well, the Leafs are in a bit of a different position now because, I mean, they're still up against the cap, but they unloaded the Marleau deal. Matthews and Nylander are done. They got one guy left.
Yeah.
You know, this is where we were talking about Winnipeg earlier. Well, they've got 2. They've still got to get Line A and Connor done.
Winnipeg's an interesting one.
They're an interesting
question.
Because if it comes down to it, you might have to pick.
And just because I haven't reported, or Bob or Dregs, that Line A hasn't got a call today. Doesn't mean he hasn't, by the way.
Well, why would
we haven't heard that?
He should.
So
I would have called on him every day of the week. You know. But you have to call around on all of these players to see if any of them haven't even an inkling of an appetite.
No question.
Because as we've pointed out several times, these players have to sign it. They actually have to commit, like, I will sign an offer sheet to go to organization X.
That's a big deal. And I've said this story before, but when Shea Weber signed that offer sheet, even though it seemed like a means to an end, so that, because Nashville didn't have money back then, they had ownership problems. The spin at the time, I think, was, well, this is a way to finally get, he was arguably the best defenseman in the game at the time, or one of, still one of the best, but that back then it was the guy. Finally, I'm getting paid, so offer sheet from the Flyers and Nashville matches. But I will tell you, the immediate aftermath effect of that offer sheet was David Poile had the plant seeded in him that he was going to trade Shea Weber one day.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's...
Yeah.
It's a very emotional thing when you go through the offer sheet route.
But yeah, you take it personally.
You can't just say, this is a way to get my deal with you. It's a little...
Yeah.
You know, there are ways to get signed. Now, I don't blame the Marner camp from looking at every option here to get what they believe is fair. I think he'll end up signing with the Leafs. Here's the unfortunate consequence, even if he signs with the Leafs, let's say, on Sunday or Monday. The last 2 weeks leading up to Monday are the 2 most important weeks of the entire season to reshape your roster. And outside of trading Marleau and trying on Subban, the Leafs have been paralyzed by the Marner situation. And I've talked to other teams and agents about this who have had conversations with the Leafs, and the Leafs are like, I'll get back to you. We've got to figure out Marner. Now, that's not to say they won't do something here in the next few days before the Marner thing, but I'm just saying in general, it's limited their ability
to be in
to
on
do
anything.
Some of the things. And what happens is, sure, maybe Marner signs Sunday or Monday, but have they missed out on things already that have transpired?
Right.
And you know,
trade or a player ends up moving somewhere else where they were in on that.
You could say all you want. You got all summer to fix your team, but a lot of the options evaporate in a hurry in this 2-week period.
Right. So do you think that would be because Dubas really doesn't know what the number is going to be, or he doesn't truly believe that Marner actually wants to commit? You know, because that's two different stories.
Like, yeah.
Two very different angles.
To be honest, right. it has to be at the end of the day because he's not 100% sure he's going to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't get him, if he's forced to trade him, then presumably, I'm just going to throw this out as an example, not as something I think the Leafs are thinking of. So please don't radio me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're forced to trade Marner. And again, I'm on record. I think Marner signs with the Leafs. And in the last couple of days, by the way, I think the Leafs and Marner's camp have had some dialogue under the radar here. But if he doesn't sign and he's traded, does it not behoove the Leafs to at least phone Artemi Panarin's camp and say, hey, is it too late for us to have a conversation? So that's an example of what I'm saying. You need time if you're the Leafs to pivot here if things don't go your way.
Right.
Well, everybody's got the pivot plan. If you don't, you're not doing your job.
I'm sure they do have the plan, but they have time to perform it.
Well, don't you think Dubas...
Like, you can't wait till Monday to call Panarin. Panarin's making his decision probably by Friday.
Right. But why wouldn't you, if you're Dubas, why aren't you calling these other RFAs? Like, why wouldn't you be calling Mikko Rantanen?
Who's to say they're not?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know that
he
they
should
are,
be.
But yeah.
Like, I don't understand how you could explain what you're doing if you're not calling these camps.
The other thing I would say is this, and it's not so much tied to what happened with Liam Nylander, although I guess subconsciously maybe it is what I'm about to say, but should the Leafs draw a line here soon this week and say, this has to be figured out by this day?
No kidding.
Well,
this is our offer.
Like this can't be. This goes till camp here, all over again.
They don't have that option again,
right?
Because they're up against the cap. You know, again with Nylander with the backsliding, you know, front-loaded first-year cap hit, and then everything slides down after that. They're not going to have that availability this season. But it kind of felt like they were trying to put forth that front before the draft. You know, they've been saying since day one when they were eliminated, priority one is to get Marner done.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it again. We've learned from past mistakes.
Right.
Problem is, and it's not a problem, it's just a reality of business, it takes two to tango.
Right.
In Marner's camp, they don't have to follow those guys.
And again, from Marner's perspective, you can certainly see the validity in using now this RFA speaking period as your leverage.
Yeah,
it's hard to argue.
It's his right.
Yeah.
It's his right, just like we've talked about. It's other managers' right to use the CBA if they want to.
Yeah. But, and by the way, no other RFA signed.
Right.
Kyle Connor's out there. Patrick Laine's out there.
That's right.
The guy that I thought was going to sign right away is still not signed. Braden Point.
Mm-hmm.
Aho. Brock Besser.
Charlie McAvoy.
You go right down
dying to come back to Boston.
None of these guys have signed. Matthew Tkachuk, by the way. I'm not sure how that first conversation went from what I heard last week between Calgary and Tkachuk. So it's not like it. You know, we live in Toronto, so Marner's the.
Right.
But this is happening. This is a story that is shared on many fronts within teams and these high profile RFAs. And. You know, it's almost like everyone involved is like, I don't want to go first.
But that's what I was just thinking. If Braden Point goes first and he's on a nice, some sort of slightly valued contract.
Tampa dollars.
Right.
Right. So then.
The old Nashville dollar. That's
there
right.
There could be a ripple effect.
Just got
whether
up here.
Potentially.
I just got it. Got me back, brother. No, you're right. Because if that one went first, then you're like, for example, imagine if William Karlsson's 5.9 a year went before the Kevin Hayes one this summer.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Hayes and Skinner sign, it's like, whoa, salaries are going up. But then Karlsson gives Vegas a deal.
Right.
It's interesting, the perception and the impact.
Absolutely.
And it's real. Like, I know you think we just say this in the media and we debate this on Overdrive. Every signing in this 2-week juncture has a big impact on the conversations that are happening in real time between all these free agents and teams.
Right.
You know?
Oh, they've been
you
going
find your
a
direct
while.
Comp and you're like, bang, this is the freshest signing.
Yep.
I'm comparable to him.
Right.
I mean, again, if you're Matt Duchene and Kevin Hayes just got $7.14 million a year,
you're $10
million. Like, I'm sorry, but you know,
and Erik Karlsson, same thing.
Sign.
Tyler Myers' deal went up technically on paper, or maybe by perception, because Erik Karlsson, and they're not even comparable. I'm just
Jacob
saying.
Jacob Trouba's extension's been affected.
Right. It
hasn't been signed.
It drags up. Everyone drags into that The weight.
But then William Karlsson,
I could see
a lot of front offices were happy. William Karlsson at 5'9", I was like, okay.
But William Karlsson's happy too. I think he slept well last
night. That's what he wanted.
He's got 8 years in Vegas where there's no tax, and he's got a girlfriend from Vegas.
Very good team.
Yeah.
Pierre LeBrunner, Hockey Insider in studio. What are you hearing on Jake Gardner? Like, he can talk with teams. I haven't heard his name come up.
He's going to do well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being the highest paid UFAD on Monday. It'll be between him and Myers. A lot of interest for a puck moving D. You know, they've been handling a lot of calls on him at CAA in Los Angeles. They're keeping it tight. They don't want, you know, teams out there. But I think some of it's obvious, you know, the teams that need D.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't closed the door on Toronto. But, again, here's another great example of where they've said, until we know what's going on with,
Yeah, because, you know, we were saying this earlier in the afternoon, you know, obviously the Mitch Marner conversation is a more interesting one because of who he is and everything that's going on here. But once he signs, if he signs and the dust settles, their defense corps is still a mess.
Yeah.
Like, so something is going to have to give. Like, Nikita Zaitsev, as of today, is still on the Maple Leafs and still wants out.
And I don't think I can say this point enough. I mentioned this today on Leafs Lunch, but this isn't just about potentially replacing Gardner or replacing Zaitsev or Hainsey. The Leafs went into this offseason with an absolute plan to revamp the majority of their blue line, not just fill some holes.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, this was going to be a big summer for them to rejig their entire blue line, you know, other than the obvious suspects. But, and, you know, they did dabble on PK Subban. They got in those talks. But so far they haven't been able to get anything done there.
Right. Which that's got to be incredibly frustrating for Dubas and Babcock for that matter too. Like, you know, the head coach is sitting there saying, I'm on the hot seat here.
Yeah.
I got to improve. We got to win. Like, they have to win. They cannot accept. No one's going to accept them taking a step or two back. No way. Not with this roster. It's
supposed to be go time.
It's supposed to be. You got all these star players.
They won't have no matter how many smart moves they make this summer, and I'm a Kyle Dubas believer. They do not come back with the same depth, no matter how well it goes, because at the end of the day, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner went from free players to expensive players within one season
overnight.
So, by definition, regardless, if you have the best offseason you can possibly can as the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're coming back as a 2.5 line team instead of a 4 line team.
Well,
I say that, you know, I'm sure we'll think that there's value.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean,
but they're going to have to make it work. Like, if the players, you know, here you go with your pressure now. Like, everyone's loved. Like, I've said this repeatedly all week because I think it's important to point out. It always comes off as negative with Mitch Marner because, you know, people want him to sign and people would prefer that he takes a cheaper number, all that kind of stuff. He's a local kid, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But when he's been on the ice, it's been nothing but optimistic takes.
Right.
Nothing but rave reviews. Nothing but we love Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and William Nylander's a little bit different. But now, when you're making $10-11 million and other guys got to go, like Patrick Marleau is an example. You know, they're all writing these heartfelt messages. It's not going to be the same without you, Patty.
Right.
Well, when you sign for $11.6 million, he can't stay. But that's the truth.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. That's the truth. You know, like Babcock at the draft is like,
you should have been moderating those discussions with the.
No, I'm not blaming the players for taking the money.
Yeah.
But that's the truth.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, there's a direct impact on the cap system, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they loved him, but basically their new contracts forced him out.
He's got to go. Like Babcock said at the draft, John Tavares may not have signed here if it wasn't Patrick Marleau. Well, Patrick Marleau's got to go because he did sign here.
Yeah.
Like, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's business, but.
The other thing I would tell you, too, and whether it happens over the next few days or the next week or two, I think we're in for more trades than normal. Normally, this is more about. No,
I hope you're right.
No, normally this is more about signings.
In a row.
I hope you're right.
I've been right some years, by the way.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Here, hold that thought for 1 second, because we got to say goodbye to TSN
too. Right.
We'll continue on TSN Radio. We're back tomorrow on TSN 4 at 4 p.m. Pierre on TSN Radio. Continue with your thought.
No, I just talked to a couple of teams this week that said the term on some of these UFAs are scaring them so much. As far as a commitment. And term is a new battle now for these teams. They're finally starting to learn their
right
that they want to go out and acquire. I'll give you an example. Chicago went out and got Calvin DeHaan. Listen, number 5 defenseman, number 4 defenseman.
Right.
But the appealing part of his deal was that I think there's 3 years left on it.
Yeah.
This idea of having to pay up 6 to 7 years for all these players on the market is beginning to scare teams more than before. And so is it smarter to give up an asset to go get a player with 1 year left or 2 years left on his deal at a number that's already locked in? Right. And I'm hearing more of that than I used to at this time of year.
That makes sense.
That's all I wanted to share.
Yeah,
I'm not saying blockbusters, but I think you might see a lot of these medium deals.
Yes. Listen, the NBA, they eventually, it's 4 and 5 year max contracts. That's the next hill these guys are going to die on, I believe.
They steal a line from Bill Daly.
Absolutely. Well, remember, that was the hill he was dying on. Not going above 5 years. Thanks, Bill. I guess you're still dead on that hill because it went all the way to 8. All right, Pierre, good seeing you, buddy. Thanks.
Love you guys. That was great being on when I was on this year. And
I guess we won't see you again. Well, we'll see you on Monday at Free Agent Friends.
Yeah, I'll see you in person, yeah.
Yeah, but next September, we'll get back.
We'll do it again. Come up and see me at the cottage this summer, guys.
You got it, buddy.
Salut.
There's Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Steve Phillips on the Jays, getting swept by the Yankees, but any positive signs specifically with the bats? We'll get to that answer next. All right, so the Blue Jays lost again this afternoon. They got swept down at Yankee Stadium. But they were in all three games. I mean, that's a sign of a bad team. Moral victories.
They were there.
Hey, they were in it. They didn't get blown out. You know, we played that Ryan Dempster clip earlier. He was on with us yesterday.
He was pretty bang on, though.
Yeah, he's like, you know, you give up solo home runs. Just make sure you don't give up, like, a three-run shot. And last night, they gave up 4 solo home runs, and they lost 4-3, including a shot by DJ LeMahieu, first at bat of the game. And then Aaron Judge followed that up. Before you know it, it's 2-0, and the rest is history. But the positives that I think people are leaning towards are the bats, and specifically Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Scotty Mitchell, excluding today, where I think he went 3-for-4 with 2 more home runs. Since May 24th, when he was recalled from AAA, Gurriel Jr. is slashing .330, .372, .679, with 10 home runs, 18 extra base hits, 19 RBI, in 29 games.
I think that's the definition of a productive trip to the minors.
Oh, for sure.
The definition of go find your game. And you know what? He's had a couple of assists in the outfield. Like, his arm has been on display to an extent. You know, he's never going to win any Gold Gloves, but if he can defend at like an average level and hit, you're money. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
We were just talking about the perfect trip to the minors. Is that working on your game, or is that missing the planes and the food, and you want to get your ass back on the plane and eat the food?
You know, it's interesting. I wrote about them a little bit last week in my column for .ca, the player development staff deserves a ton of credit because they got a guy coming back who was mentally and emotionally and spiritually kind of broken. You think about it, he had the yips in the infield. He couldn't make the throw to second base. It was affecting his offense. I think he was hitting like .125. And everything that could go wrong was going wrong. But they put it back together again. And I got to tell you, the move to the outfield may be exactly the thing that's helping the bat. That the throwing and the defense in the infield may have been weighing on him from some period of time. And affecting the offense. When you start to get so consumed and obsessed by failure or things that you can't do that you're not doing, it can impact the other components of your game. And he seems so relaxed at the plate right now. You know, he had a streak last year. I think he had about 8 or 9 consecutive multi-hit games and was on a great run. And he showed flashes, but we're really seeing a guy that could be a corner player, right? That was my question last week, is can he sustain this level of offense to be a corner outfielder, which means, you know, you're not just a guy that hits for average. You've got to have some impact. You've got to be as part of a championship team. You've got to be a run producer. And he's looking like that right now. And obviously the great pedigree of the family, obviously his brother Yuli Gurriel with the Astros. His father was an absolute superstar in Cuba. And is Mr. Baseball down there. He's been commissioner of the league. He's been manager of the year. He's been an MVP. And so it's in the blood and in the genes. And they've got great hair, too. I mean, the dad's bald, which is amazing. the kids have amazing hair. So they must take after mom with that. But you know what? He's really come into his own and is looking like and developing into an everyday corner outfielder.
Well, that's where I think the excitement is being found here for Blue Jay fans, because you're not going to find it with the standings. They're going to lose a million ball games this year. But Biggio has been a stud since he came up. And you know what Vladdy is, and you know what Vladdy's going to be. we're waiting for Bo Bichette to come up, and when he comes up, I think the expectation is more than likely he hits the ground running, or at some point will round into a very quality bat in the majors. So if you're talking Biggio, Gurriel Jr., Vladdy, Bichette, I mean, that's a four-pack that I think Blue Jays fans are starting to get excited about, and I think they should be very excited about.
Yeah, I think the one thing to think about, look at it this way, that when you're building a team, what you want to do is you want to find a leadoff hitter. You want to find a 3-4 hitter in your lineup. And, you know, you can find the right mold for a two-hole hitter. It, you know, could be your best hitter. You move them up there, let like a guy like Vladdy Jr. hit. But you look for that on-base percentage. But you want the aircraft carrier. You want the run producer in the middle of the lineup. And you're starting to see them get answers about those roles. Like, it's easy to fill the 7-8 hitter, 9 hitter in the lineup. Sometimes even easier to fill the 6 hitter. And you can go into free agency and get those guys much less expensive. It's the impact guys, the leadoff hitter, the 2-3-4 hitters that cost money if you're going to have to spend money in the free agent market or if you're going to have to trade to get them. And so if you can develop those guys and then fill in around them, it's a much more productive and efficient rebuilding process. Now, in addition, they need to sort of get the wave of pitchers up to the speed of the wave of hitters, which they're not really there yet. And that's where I look at this trade deadline, where maybe you package a Stroman and a Giles together, and you can bring in, you know, AAA, Major League, you know, one-year service time pitchers to sort of get it, you know, coupled with the offensive players that really get this rebuilding process rolling.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. So your New York Mets have been in the news a lot recently.
Oh, I've heard.
Yeah, pretty fascinating scenario where the manager's trying to kill a reporter and, you know, wanted to start
trying to kill him, though?
Well, he had some... I'm joking.
Oh.
Is this your first time doing radio with me? It's sarcasm. And, you know, Jason Vargas jumps in. But then on top of that, I think a more interesting topic of discussion that I think probably applies up here in Toronto is this report out of, I think it was the New York Post, that Brody Van Wagenen, the new GM, who was an agent 6 months ago, is calling up Mickey Callaway, the manager, during the game and telling him when to make a pitching change. What do you make of that report?
Right. So here's what I believe they're talking about. Is on June 1st, Jacob DeGrom was pitching in Arizona. And Brody Van Wagenen, the general manager, was at his home in Connecticut watching the game on TV. And he noticed DeGrom sort of favoring his hip, his side a little bit. He then called the clubhouse to get information about what was going on with DeGrom. Now, you know, what happened from there with the information, what he heard and what he said, we don't really know. Now, he has denied telling Mickey Callaway what moves to make. And I will tell you that if it had been me and I was not on the road trip and I saw my pitcher, my ace, laboring, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I was his agent at one point, but if I'm the GM, I'm going to call. What I would have done is I would have called our clubhouse guy that's traveling with the team. I would have said, listen, shoot down to the dugout and find out from our head trainer what's going on with DeGrom and let me know what's happening. And the reason I'd want to know that is because if there is something significant going, it's my job now to figure out what happens if. What happens if we need to put him on the injured list? And I would then have to alert the AAA team about what's going on and talk to my staff about who the potential replacement would be, just getting all that in order. And so that information is important for a general manager. Now, I got to tell you, he denied, you know, telling to make in-game moves, and I tend to believe him. I believe that they were talking about this issue with DeGrom where he did call, and I would have called too. Every general manager of baseball, if they were home watching, would call somebody to try to find out what's going on. So I don't think it's as dramatic as they want, and I think because of the conflict of interest, because it's the Mets, and here's the thing with the Mets, and I did it too, and I don't know why, but I could look at that big pile of doo-doo in the sidewalk in front of me, and I always stepped in it. And it seems like the Mets executives always seem to step in it still, and it's hard to know, but there's always something going on in New York. Now, here, when I was the executive, it drove me crazy. In the media, I think it's the greatest gift ever that is the New York Mets.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's because the Yankees are just going to keep cruising. You know, they're just going to keep winning, and they're attractive from a media perspective because of the scope, the amount of people that are obviously fans, and they're probably going to make a couple of trades. But scandal, dysfunction, I mean, that's page six, man. That's what you're looking for. And the Mets, to your point, Steve, they always seem to supply it.
Yeah, they do. Now, and here's the thing. Like, they really have a lot of, I think, good things going on. A lot of good things going on within the bad stuff going on. Like, Pete Alonso, the first baseman, is a star. I mean, he's a star. I'd lock him up for as many years as you can lock him up. He's a humble superstar who cares, who plays to the crowd. He's got a great personality. He's got leadership skills for being a rookie. Jeff McNeil's hitting like 340 for them. Can play a little infield, some outfield, a really solid player. Michael Conforto's legit. And DeGrom. Now, the rest of it's kind of a mess, and they can't seem to get any level of consistency. And they have had big expectations, and they've got some dysfunction, you know, from the ownership level down to the front office, and they've got sort of a different structure and philosophy that they have in place that sort of gets in the way. But there are some good things there. They just can't seem to get any momentum in a really tough division with a lot of talented teams.
Steve, how would you feel if you're managing the Rays or the manager of the Rays and the owner came to you and said, might be a possibility that half the games might be up in Montreal? Wouldn't you think that was kind of nutso?
I would say comme ci, comme ça. I would have issues with it. I mean, there's so many different things.
Oh,
that are
yeah, we were talking earlier, like kids
this.
In school, like simple stuff like that.
Yeah,
you can't
right.
do it.
Like, what do you, free agents? You know, to get a free God. Agent to come to your team, you know, they travel with their wives when they come in and meet with you. And can you imagine the conversation? We're like, look, here, what's going to be great? You're going to spend a few months here in Florida, then you're going to move your family up to Montreal. And yes, you're going to have two homes. You're going to have one place in Montreal, one place in Florida. And, you know, schools, well, maybe you can sort of work, you know, schools, so finish one year and start in that year in another school. And so, I mean, it's really complicated. The other part in this is that think about this. Building a stadium without a dome is 30% less expensive than one with a dome. So you save 30% on the overall construction price for a non-dome stadium versus a dome stadium. But what they're asking in Tampa is they want them to build a stadium that costs 30% less than the dome one, but you only get half the games. So why do I want to pay 70% of the dome stadium to get 50% of the games instead of building an entire stadium with a dome and getting 100% of the games? The math doesn't add up. And the mayor in St. Petersburg is like, yeah, that doesn't work for us. We're not in on a part-time basis on this, and if they want to have any sort of real conversation, they've got to come back and mend the relationship. Here's the thing, they're not going to have a stadium in Tampa, and I think this whole plan was an idea to transition to, you know, hopefully play some games in Montreal, some games in Tampa, with the idea that in 2028, their lease is up after 2027, in 2028, they'll move full-time to Montreal. But it just, the split two-city team doesn't work.
No, doesn't work, won't work, but they're exploring it.
Yes.
There's an exploration happening right now. Very important stuff. Great stuff, Steve, as always, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Exploring.
I think if you're single, you could still handle that.
Yeah.
Montreal for 3 months?
Yeah.
Pretty good city.
That would work. Montreal would work. But they need a new stadium, too.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not only about Tampa, right? You can't go back to the Big O. No way. Brutal. Brutal. And like Dempster was saying, where it is in the city, I think it's out in the West End, kind of out in the middle
of
nowhere.
Not desirable, yeah.
Yeah, just it's got to be downtown. Anyway.
That's fair.
Jerry's After Dark and our best bets brought to you by ProLine next.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, we do. Horny for one more hot take.
Extremely.
Multiple.
Razzers, yes. Level.
Multiple Viagra hot takes. Injected. Jerry. Let's hear the take.
Mitch Marner signs with the Maple Leafs by Sunday.
Wow. That is quite the volcanic take. After all of this, he doesn't even get to July 1, according to Jerry.
100%.
You think he's going to sign between now and Sunday night?
Yeah, I do. Because I'm sick of talking about it. And I know it's a part of our job here, but I love talking about specific plays or a great game. We've been through Stamkos. We've been through Tavares. We've been through Nylander. Matthews. And I know it's topical stuff. Matthews. I'm done. I'm on Team Steph.
I heard that earlier.
I am on Team Steph. She's tired of the contract talks and blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's going to be a relief when it gets done, if it gets done.
But I say it's done by Sunday.
I'm not as confident.
I'm 6%.
Whoa.
There's no chance it's getting done by Sunday.
Well, and if it goes beyond July 1, then I think I could see Dubas just hanging up his phone for a month and saying, you guys go do your own thing.
I'm wrong. I can't say there's no chance.
There's a chance.
It's ridiculous for me to say that.
That is a crazy statement for Jerry.
But I think this gets a little gritty. That's all I'll say. I think this drags in the dirt a little bit.
Mm. Well, it's gone this far already.
Exactly. I think they'll get it done. I think Mitch Marner will be a Maple Leaf. But I think it goes south before it goes north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll say 30%. Like the Leafs, you know, they keep saying priority, 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 which I'm sure Marner is responding by saying, yeah, it's simple. Just pay me exactly what I'm asking for and it's over, which is totally his right. And obviously Dubas doesn't want to give him whatever he's asking for right now or it would have been done.
Correct.
So if there's still a negotiation ongoing, I'm not sure what's going to change between now and Sunday night. But for everybody's sanity, I hope that you're right. It gets done. And then you can start talking about the actual team and the makeup of the team and the projection.
And they've got lots of work to shape the team.
They do.
That's the one thing that, you know, we were talking about. You get Mitch Marner done, great. You still have to fill out a fourth line. You still have to reshape your defensive core. Look at a backup goaltender. But you'll know how much you have to spend.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mitch Marner will be done.
Yep. That's the hope. That's the plan. Will it happen? We'll find out.
Well, we'll get to chat about it tomorrow. You
know? Yeah, we will. Well, don't forget, it's free agent frenzy. And TSN 1050's free agent frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Tick every box in a Subaru fully equipped for summer adventures. Visit your local Ontario Subaru dealer for great rates on 2019 models. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Cardinals tonight, Houston home plus over the Pirates. And I'm on Jason Vargas and the Mets and Mickey Callaway with a big win tonight. Jason Vargas got himself in some trouble earlier in the week.
I don't blame those guys for not saying sorry. They weren't sorry.
No, they weren't sorry.
Yeah, so why apologize and be like, oh, sorry, buddy, when you don't even mean it?
They were absolutely not sorry. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine. Get way into the game.
They were sorry, not sorry.
That's right. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Hashtag office for the day.
I'll be throwing out some hashtags soon. Office for the day.
Yep. Hashtag my life is better than your life. There's a million of them.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Cos enjoys that.
He likes a good hashtag, doesn't he?
It's hilarious. I love him.
All right, we're out of here. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.